Hello and welcome to Behind the Buyouts, the Deals podcast, where we speak to private equity and venture capital practitioners about their deals and deal making. I'm your guest host, Nikita Satyaraju, senior reporter at The Deal. We have with us today Anne Philpott, managing director on the private equity and junior capital team at Churchill Asset Management. Anne is actively involved in sourcing and executing investments on the team and oversees mandates including LP commitments, equity co-investments, structured capital, secondaries, and junior capital loans. She's here to talk to us about the firm's strategies, the state of private credit, and her expectations for M&A in 2024. Anne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Great. So let's start with talking a little bit about your career and your journey leading up to your current role at Churchill.
Great. So I actually started my career at TIA. I was on the private placements group doing senior debt originations and underwriting, and then joined the private equity and junior capital team at Nuveen in 2011. Since then, I've risen to managing director. I'm on the investment committee, and I also oversee our primaries fund commitment program. So that's $1 billion annual program in U.S. middle market funds. I am also on the DEI council, serving as co-chair, and oversee Nuveen's diverse managers investment program.
So you've been at the firm one way or another your entire career.
Right, correct.
Then tell us about the firm's strategies from a bird's eye view with the different solutions that it offers, and then maybe we can dive into the specifics of private equity and junior capital.
Great. So Churchill, we're the private capital arm of Nuveen. So all of U.S. middle market private equity is on our platform. That includes $30 billion of senior lending and $20 billion of private equity and junior capital. That includes funds, mezzanine, equity co-investments. We also just recently launched a secondaries program, which is performing great. And really, we like to think of ourselves as a one-stop shop for all of these platforms. And we allow our private equity sponsors to select from all of our options. We're able to provide support up and down the balance sheet and really offer capital solutions for all of their needs.
So in terms of the deal types that you're focused on in your role specifically, can you talk a little bit about those and the opportunities you're seeing there right now?
Right. So on the fund side, which is really the engine of the business and where we're sourcing our deals, it's a great time to be an LP. There are a lot of funds in market. And because of some of the volatility in the market, there's extended fundraising timelines. So we have this great opportunity to spend time and really, really get to know the decision makers at these firms and continue to add to our fund portfolio. On the junior capital side for mezzanine, we're seeing a combination right now of lower leverage and high interest rates. And so it's making our pipeline of opportunities very, very attractive. And so we're very, very excited about the opportunities in 2024. Similar story on the equity side, our deal flow continues to increase. And so we remain selective there. We're starting to see a lot more activity on the buyout side. And so equity co-investment deal flow continues to increase. And we're seeing some great transactions as everyone moves towards a flight to quality. And secondaries as well, even though that's a nascent strategy for us. We've closed over $400 million of transactions, but we left about $1 billion of excess capacity. And so that represents a huge opportunity going forward for us.
I think on secondaries, you also mentioned when we spoke the last time about the opportunity that exists in the market because there are more funds that want to do continuation vehicles. I'm curious to know what that stat looks like and what your expectations are for this year.
Yeah, I think about 30% of sponsors have closed some type of secondary transaction. But when you think about the GPs that want to, it increases to over 50%. And so when we talk about the opportunity going forward, I feel really, really good about that program. It's an opportunity for sponsors to leverage a really great transaction dynamic. So if they know a management team and a company very well, but need to generate some liquidity for their LPs, they're able to partner with the management team. The management team will roll their equity. And then secondary players like Churchill are able to step in and help finance a new transaction. And when you're talking about the second bite of the apple, these sponsors have already done the heavy lifting of hiring senior investment professionals to scale the business. They've made significant add-on acquisitions. These are assets that are performing. And it's really just a great relationship between the management teams and the GPs. And so it's a great, great opportunity for us to participate alongside those sponsors.
For sure. And I think on the co-investing side, you mentioned before, there's a little bit of a shift in landscape in terms of who GPs want to partner with and how relationships matter. Could you talk a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, our relationships with the sponsors is really a significant competitive advantage. We did an internal survey with some of our top relationships and asked them, what are the factors that decide who you choose as a co-investor? And number one factor was relationships. When you think about scale and certainty to close and execution capabilities, all of those factor in, obviously. But relationships and that alignment of interest, when you really know who's partnering with you on a transaction, that continues to be very, very important for our sponsors and is a reason that we're positioned so well in the market.
Are GPs sort of tapping a smaller group of co-investors right now just as a function of needing to have good relationships, or has that changed at all from maybe, say, 2022?
Yeah, you're seeing some of that. I think last year, when there was a lot of uncertainty and volatility in the market, with the increase in financing costs and the volatility in the markets, you really wanted a lot of confidence for the deal makers to complete their transactions. And so you saw GPs reach out to the people that had proven execution capabilities, LPs that they knew could execute and support these transactions. So that's been a shift. We also saw recently that with leverage levels either decreasing or holding steady, a lot of sponsors were over-equitizing their deals. And so reaching out to LPs more frequently and for deals where previously they might have taken a last turn of leverage, putting in more equity into transactions. And so that's one of the reasons our equity deal flow is up significantly.
And I think I'd have similar questions in terms of deal opportunities for industries as well. I know this has been Churchill's strategy from the start, but I am curious to know in terms of the attractive opportunities that you're seeing, which sectors you'd say are the most prominent right now?
This has been core to our strategy since inception. We've always focused on recession resilient businesses, low CapEx requirements, durable businesses. And so we see our largest exposures to business services, healthcare, tech-enabled services, anywhere where you're adding a lot of value to the end consumer, but at a low cost. And these are platforms that have high EBITDA margins, strong revenue growth, and sponsors are really leaning into these sectors.
And where would you say you would maybe not invest in as much? You know, what are the things that maybe when you see, you're like, okay, these are not the things that we want to participate in?
Yeah, I think right now we're thinking anything high CapEx requirements, right? Which with the financing requirements, that would make it really tough to transact and feel really confident about what EBITDA levels are and the cash flow needs to service your debt levels. Also, direct consumer businesses. Consumer services are okay, and we see a lot of business servicers are tech-enabled. Again, those we like, but anything direct consumers, we're leaning a little bit away from.
I am going to ask you just a little bit on the business services side, because as you know, I absolutely love talking about it. Can you talk a little bit about some of the subsectors that you've either invested in or will continue to invest in within that sector that have been really attractive, especially on the services, facility services side?
Yeah, so HVAC services has been a big one. I know we've talked about that before. Again, this is one where it's just right up our alley. So you have a low-cost service that you're providing relative to the cost of failure or the cost of the full replacement for the equipment would be pretty significant. And there's just a lot of white space in this market right now. You have a lot of companies that have a great brand that they can leverage to grow in their particular markets. You have geographic locations in the Southeast, in the Southwest that really, really need heating and air conditioning to function really, really well. So there's a lot of consumer pull through. And then you have a lot of buy and build opportunities, right? There's a lot of local mom and pops that have reached an inflection point in their business. They've scaled to a certain point and are really looking for someone to come in and help them reach the next stage of their business. So there's a lot of opportunities there. But again, just going back to the core part of the business where it's a necessary service, but relatively low cost. And since they're not involved in the manufacture of these parts, you don't have the volatility of the CapEx requirements. And it's just a really nice space for us right now.
Absolutely. I mean, and I agree, because that's all I'm writing about these days. I do want to talk more broadly about M&A expectations this year. You mentioned deal flows getting better. There's more equity deals particularly. I'm curious to know if you can put some numbers to that, and things are looking better than they did at the start of 2023.
We definitely think so. I think in early 2023, there was a little bit of a pause as people wanted to settle into the new normal. We saw a big increase in the second half in terms of deal flow. Overall, for 2023 versus 2022, our equity and MES program deal flows were both up about 5%, with really strong momentum in the fourth quarter. And we're seeing that now 2 months into 2024. So we're seeing a good momentum through the first part of the year. I think that's for a few reasons. One, there's a lot more certainty in the financial markets right now. And so people are settling into the new normal and financing costs. People feel good about where rates are, maybe even anticipating a rate decrease. So it's giving more deal makers a lot more confidence in terms of completing their transactions. And then we're also just seeing really great opportunities. There are some very, very strong businesses that are up for sale right now. So a lot of interest from buyers across the spectrum.
And what about the valuation gaps? Like, there are strong businesses in the market, which means they probably do have a little bit of advantage when it comes to the valuations they want. But has there been like maybe a little bit of a narrowing of that gap that was such a big problem in, say, like late 2022, early 23?
Absolutely. We're definitely seeing some narrowing. There's really, really nice performing businesses in the market right now, right? That will always command a premium. But you're at this point in fundraising, which I alluded to earlier on the GP side, where if you want to raise a fund, you have to be able to demonstrate that you can exit your existing platforms. And so maybe there are small concessions in terms of sale price. Similarly, there's a lot of dry powder in the market. And so before you can raise a new fund, you have to deploy your existing capital. And so now that the volatility has settled and people are confident with where the markets are, you're seeing a lot of premium assets and a lot of interest. And so buyers and sellers are finding a way to work together.
You also mentioned this earlier, that leverage has come down or it has held steady in many cases. But I'm curious to know if there's a little bit more flexibility on the lending side, where lenders are willing to commit a little bit more debt than they did maybe last year, because things seem to be a little less unclear and uncertain right now.
So we are seeing leverage levels hold. It's part of the reason we really like to be in the middle market and partner with the sponsors that we have in our portfolio. They tend to be very reasonable with leverage and capitalize appropriately. And that's across the middle market. There are always cases where someone is willing to take on a little bit more leverage here and there. But broadly across the market, we're seeing those levels hold. And that's part of what's making our debt opportunity so attractive right now, is that we're getting higher pricing, we're getting covenanted deals at lower leverage rates. And so very, very excited about deploying in 2024.
Absolutely. And you mentioned MES earlier and seeing more opportunities there. I'm curious to know if there's been sort of a shift. Like, was there a point over the last couple of years where demand for MES rose, or has it always been steady and we're just talking about it more right now?
Yeah, I think for us, we're fairly fortunate with the relationships that we've built and where we play in the market and our execution capabilities. Our demand has been fairly steady. We've been able to remain selective, only closing about 8% of the transactions that we see. And that's fairly consistent across vintages. One, again, I've mentioned it before, but really our execution capabilities is key. When sponsors want to own an asset and they need that certainty to close, they will reach out to their trusted partners. Two, the scale of our platform. We're really able to offer cash pay, pick options, pick toggle options. That's something very unique in the market. And so our deal flow has been holding steady, which we're extremely proud of.
Would you say that's true for the market in general outside of Churchill? Or would you say that's something that you're seeing more for your firm than like the rest of the market?
I think there's definitely an advantage to scale players like Churchill. We are in a very unique position. We have over 300 fund commitments, a core portfolio of over 100 managers. And so our position as a premier LP with our advisory board seats, with our long-term relationships with these sponsors, really puts us in a premium position. But you are seeing the growth of private credit in general as the syndicated market is dealing with the volatility and a little bit on pause. Traditional deals that would need to go to the syndicated market, now that there's enough players of scale, it's a transaction that you could close with just one to two players. And so we'll bring in a partner where necessary, or if the sponsor wants to just lean on two of its existing relationships to close a transaction. And so it's really a combination of the growth of private credit and some of the volatility that's impacting other lenders.
For sure. And you also kind of mentioned, obviously, like payment in kind, things like that, that make it more competitive. Do you think those will help private credit hold its own as the traditional bank lenders start coming back to the M&A scene?
Absolutely. So we're seeing in general, you know, I mentioned the flight to quality. Right now, only the best companies are able to obtain financing in this environment. And so when sponsors are looking to close a transaction, offering that type of flexibility really allows you to stand out. And they're able to, one, complete their diligence as they normally would, and really focus on creating a transaction that works for their ownership and their value creation plan. And so the flexibility is really unique and it's a differentiator. And so we've been able to use that to stand out in processes that would be considered competitive, because again, these are really, really high quality businesses that everyone would finance and would want to be a part of. But our unique financing capabilities really give us a competitive edge.
I also want to talk a little bit about some of the shifts that I was hearing about last year in private credit, just in terms of the frenzy from 21 and 22 kind of calming down. And a lot of direct lenders were taking a more cautious approach, putting in, as you mentioned, lower leverage, and then maybe shying away from unfunded debt or like enforcing covenants like most favored nation was more strictly. Has that landscape shifted? Are they willing to be more flexible outside of just Churchill? In general, are they willing to be more flexible, or are they still taking that same cautious approach?
We've seen a mix. So there are definitely situations where some lenders are willing to be a little bit more flexible and either speak for more leverage or maybe a little bit wider covenant than traditionally they might have. Where we play in the market, our sponsors are still fairly conservative with leverage. We're targeting transactions with covenants. Again, the consistency of our investment approach, we think, is what leads to the consistency of our performance, right? We have very low loss ratios across our platform. Again, that selectivity of closing less than 10% of the transactions that we're reviewing. And so even though there might be changes in the broader market where we play and getting the deal flow from the sponsors that we know really, really well, just feel really, really good about our position in the market.
Absolutely. And also the bit about scaled firms having the advantage, people with relationships having the advantage. What does that mean for private credit consolidation? Are we going to see more of the larger firms absorb smaller funds that don't have the same advantages?
I definitely think we'll see a move to consolidation. I think scale is key, right? For the reasons we mentioned before. One, it's the certainty, knowing that you've got a full platform that can back a transaction. That's always important as sponsors are looking for certainty to close and partners to transact with. I think there's always room for niche players. Again, going back to the relationship, there's regional players, there's sector focused players that have built those relationships, and that works for certain sponsors. But it's really our relationships with these GPs, our advisory board seats, our long-term commitment to their platform, and the alignment of being one of their largest LPs and investors in the fund that has and will continue to just give us a competitive advantage.
And I think I missed out on asking this earlier, but just circling back to M&A, with the election coming up later this year, do you think that's going to have any impact on deal timelines? And maybe we'll see more activity in the first half compared to the second half.
So I think there's always an opportunity for the election to have an impact one way or another. But I do think that the bigger impact will be from the strong economy and a lot of the certainty around interest rates. We saw a big pause, as you alluded to earlier, when people weren't sure when the ceiling would hit for interest rates last year. And there was a big gap in the seller and buyer valuations. Now that a lot of that's settled, people feel really good that we've avoided a recession and are expecting interest rates to hold steady. I think people are very, very excited to transact on some of the high quality assets that are out there.
For sure. What have I missed out on asking that you think should be an important thing that we discuss before I let you go?
We're really, really excited about 2024. We expected a large pickup in the second half of 2023, and we started to see some of that momentum definitely in the fourth quarter. And so far this year, again, continue to see our GPs find really high quality assets, and we're able to transact, you know, across the platform, whether it's mezzanine, equity co-investment, or senior debt. And so very, very excited about the opportunities this year.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, thank you so much for a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Nikita Satyaraju, senior reporter at The Deal. Thanks for tuning in to Behind the Buyouts.